Hello and welcome to the Innovation Agency podcast. I'm Caroline Kenyon, Innovation Agency Director of Communications and Engagement. And in this episode, we're going to hear about innovations in preventing emergency admissions of patients with respiratory conditions. Every winter, our hospitals and GP surgeries face a surge in demand from people with flu and pneumonia, with a sharp increase in attendance at emergency departments and unplanned hospital admissions. But there are innovations happening in the Northwest and beyond, which are having an impact on reducing pressures and improving the care of people with respiratory conditions. At the Innovation Agency's 21st Ecosystem event, we brought together some of these innovators to learn from their experiences. First, we heard from COPD patient John Black, who told us what it's like living with a condition.
Living with a breathing condition, which is unusual in that it stops you doing an awful lot of things, and yet you're physically still active and your brain is still active, but you suddenly find that the effort of putting on your overcoat leaves you so breathless that you can't walk from the front door to the car without having a rest. So it's a very strange and debilitating disease. One of the things with the disease is it's a day-to-day disease. You have good days and bad days. And as you progress, you find that you have more bad days than you have good days. I've had recently, over the last couple of years, a lot of bad days. I've probably been admitted to hospital four times over the last 2 years. It's something that you very quickly become poorly. And because you're never really breathing terribly well anyway, you suddenly realise that you're past the stage of no return, that your breathing is so poor that you have to call for assistance. And when you do call for assistance, it's more than likely going to be that you'll be admitted by ambulance and end up in hospital. And that's happened certainly four times in the last couple of years for me.
The Innovation Agency is supporting a range of innovations in respiratory care, from data analysis identifying COPD hotspots to apps, technologies and improvement programmes, as Chief Executive Dr. Liz Meir explains.
So it's really important for us to be focusing on respiratory conditions because we've got really poor outcomes in the North West Coast region. So things like COPD, asthma, other respiratory issues that are affecting people. We've got people exacerbating and going into hospital, people not managing on the medicines, and people that really could do more for their own condition if they have the tools to self-manage. So we've got a real opportunity to make a difference to outcomes. We've got a range of innovations in the respiratory area. So some of them are digital, and they're mainly focused on helping people to manage their own conditions, to notice when they might be starting to exacerbate, or to monitor themselves to make sure they don't get in a state where they will exacerbate. We've also got some solutions that are about sitting down with a clinician, talking through the issues that might be affecting you and getting a personalised getting a personalised treatment around your condition. And then we've got other initiatives that are rolling out. For example, the ambulance service are just rolling out a new programme where they can pick up people with respiratory conditions and very quickly manage them so they don't end up being admitted to hospital and that they can manage the condition themselves.
What is the Innovation Agency doing to address the problems with respiratory conditions?
So the Innovation Agency has been working on a range of programmes around respiratory conditions. One is on analysing the data so we know where we've got hot spots of COPD sufferers, especially, and supporting the clinicians in that area to work with those people. The other is supporting digital innovations that can help people to self-manage. We've got a range of apps and devices that you can use if you are a respiratory condition sufferer. We've worked with the Lancashire and Cumbria Innovation Alliance Testbed, which has been about testing a range range of innovative digital products and ways of working with people so they're supported to use digital. And that has actually shown that 80% of people from any age group will use digital solutions. And then we're working with our colleague HSense to look at what they've got in the innovation space and how we can adopt them into region. We've been working with the East Midlands, with our colleagues in London, and we're going to start a bigger programme in 2020 around air quality, and we're supporting some of our university partners in pushing that forward. We're also working with system innovations around workforce. So the new physician's associate role is something that we're promoting to our primary care colleagues and in secondary care. And these are people that can come in, that can work at a different level than doctors and nurses and have a different range of skills and give time to sit down with patients, to talk them through what they can do to manage conditions, to talk them through some of the symptoms so that they know if they're going to exacerbate. So we're really promoting these new roles. We know we've got a problem with a decrease. Increasing number of workforce, especially in the north of England. So we want to maximise the use of these roles so that patients benefit at the end of the day.
A hard-hitting analysis of the problems facing health services in our region was provided by chest consultant Sarah Sibley of Liverpool Heart and Chest Hospital. She described a stark contrast with national averages. Sarah has been leading a respiratory improvement programme which involves physician associates who work flexibly between primary care and hospital emergency departments.
So there's fantastic scope for improvement of healthcare in respiratory medicine in Cheshire and Merseyside. If you look at Right Care data, we could save an extra 234 lives a year from respiratory disease if we were just as good as our peers. We also could save an extra 50,000 respiratory bed days, which is pretty much the whole of the number of emergency escalation beds that have to be opened every winter. And we spend almost £8 million on respiratory prescribing in primary care above our average peers.
Describe for us the project that you're doing in Cheshire and Merseyside. What is it you're doing and how is it working?
So this year I've been leading a respiratory improvement programme across Cheshire and Merseyside where we've been trying to bring new people into the workforce. In respiratory medicine there's a massive workforce shortage of specialist nurses, specialist physiotherapists, respiratory consultants, so we really need to bring new people into the workforce. So we've employed physician associates to work flexibly across the whole of Cheshire and Merseyside between primary care and secondary care. So in the summer months they've been working in primary care in long-term condition management of COPD, really getting the interventions that matter to patients with COPD. So those are flu vaccination, pulmonary rehabilitation and smoking cessation. And then they've been making some optimisations to respiratory medications, which are really good for patients because it's much easier to use and also saves massive amounts to the NHS. And then in the winter, they've moved over into urgent care to support the frontline workforce because we know that there's massive demand on our hospitals every winter, so it's to help bridge some of the gap that there is currently.
And what's that like for the clinicians, the staff who are working with them, who see these new people coming in doing things differently? What does that feel like?
Yes, it's been very interesting how physician associates have been received across the NHS. They're a new workforce, so there's always a little bit of scepticism about something new, understanding their training and that they actually are skilled healthcare professionals. You've had a lot of generic training, but then also 2 months of really specific respiratory training. And I have to say that as soon as people across primary care and secondary care have really met them, interacted with them, seen the difference that they make to patients, they've been really well received. And actually now people are saying they want more of them.
And what difference has it made to patients? What evidence do you have that it's having an impact?
So we've gained patient feedback throughout the whole programme and we've had absolutely phenomenal patient feedback. So people feel that the physician associates have really given them time to talk about their condition, help them to understand COPD a little bit better and how to self-manage their condition. They've empowered them, given them lots of information, given them tips on how to manage their condition, and then also made medication changes which have been really favourable to them. So they've managed to go from using maybe 6 doses of medication a day down to just 1 dose a day. So it's really made massive improvements to their care.
Sarah Sibley. She's been working closely with Health Education England's Head of Physician Associates, Kate Burnett. She sees this new approach having a big impact on everyone involved.
So we've done some innovative programmes in the Northwest. We've got a longitudinal integrated foundation and physician associate training programme, which trains workforce members differently. So they have insight across the healthcare system. So they train in the primary and secondary care setting together over a longer period of time. They build collaborative relationships with the supervisor over a two-year period, and they build a better relationship with patients, a patient cohort from the GP practice over a two-year period. So they have a cohort of patients which they follow through the healthcare system from primary care setting across to the secondary care setting. So maybe in the primary care setting they see the coughs and colds, and then they go to the community respiratory clinic and they see the patients with a respiratory nurse, and then they follow the patients that have respiratory difficulty into the A&E department, and then into the hospital admissions, and then in the hospital respiratory ward, the endoscopy clinic, the respiratory outpatient clinic, and then back into the primary care setting. So they have a better collaborative relationship with their supervisors and with their patients that they look after and support. And that's an over a two-year programme.
How different is that to what has been happening?
So that is hugely different to what has been happening in medical education. It goes back to the basis of medical education, which comes from Flexner. So Flexner says the impact of education is dependent on the quality of the collaborative relationship between teacher and student. So we've said the teachers here are the patients, are the supervisors, are the peers, is the healthcare system, and the student is the doctor or the physician associate. So it's very different, and the outcomes are very, very good.
How are the physician associates perceived by their fellow health professionals? It's a new role.
Yeah.
What does that look like from other people's perspective?
Yeah, so the physician associates are, by definition, because this is a new role, this is a new profession, they're innovative, they're young, they've taken the leap of faith to go into the profession, 50% from the healthcare backgrounds, 50% new into the NHS. How are they being perceived? Well, there's a system change here. Some of the vulnerability is playing out. We've tried to empower our physician associates by upskilling them in the how, the collaborative relationships, the relationship system intelligence, how that works. And when they go into the healthcare setting, because they've had that upskilling, yeah, they are creating innovation, and they're creating good collaborative relationships, and they're impacting on patient care. So they're helping patient care, yeah.
What do patients think about them?
Yeah, patients receive them very, very well. You know, they're building very collaborative relationships with patients. So rather than the rescuer-victim-patient relationships, they're building empowered coaching, side-by-side dynamic relationships. So the patients are receiving them very, very well, yeah.
And are they winning round, the GPs, the consultants who may have been sceptical?
Yeah, I think they are winning round, the GPs and consultants, over time. It takes time to socialise and embed a new practitioner, and that is happening. And I think in the future we'll see more and more physician associates come through. So, yeah, wonderful.
In Manchester, new ways of working are being tried out, which focus on earlier diagnosis and interventions and empowering people to self-manage their conditions. It includes virtual clinics to identify and support people. As Dr. Benita Kane, Clinical Respiratory Programme Lead at Manchester University NHS Foundation Trust and of Health Innovation Manchester, explains.
At the moment, we are diagnosing respiratory conditions far too late. We're not empowering people to look after themselves and engage in the behaviours that will keep them well. And we're waiting until people hit crisis and get really sick before we intervene. And then it becomes a very costly intervention because they're in hospital. And so the work that we're trying to do is about shifting specialism upstream, breaking down that barrier between primary and secondary care, and trying out innovative ways of working to try and address some of those issues.
Can you describe some of those innovations?
So one of the things we're rolling out across Manchester at the moment are virtual clinics. So these are based on a model that was founded in London, actually, and has been very successful down there. It's secondary care clinicians going into primary care and having face-to-face discussions through virtual patient records, but with a focus on encouraging the right behaviours, referral to pulmonary rehab, tobacco addiction, flu vaccination, as well as optimising medications and making sure people are on the right medicines. And the feedback from those virtual clinics has been fantastic. You know, primary care really welcomed the support and mentorship, if you like, in looking after the vast majority of respiratory patients who are under their care.
And what are patients saying about it?
Anecdotally, we've had reports from some of the practices that just the simple changing of an inhaler has really turned their lives around. So they may have been stuck on the same old devices for years and years, and they've been given a new lease of life, or they've engaged in pulmonary rehab, and that's really been very beneficial for them. We're not doing very well at collecting the patient feedback formally, and that's something we are working on, and it's obviously such an important aspect of what we're doing, but we're looking at innovative ways of doing that as well.
If it's working so well, are you going to be doing more of the virtual clinics?
Well, our ambition is to scale these up across Greater Manchester, across all 500 practices if we can. However, there are very clear barriers in the system to us achieving that. There's perverse payment incentives at the moment. There's workforce issues. Hospitals haven't got a lot of specialists to spare to go out and do this kind of work. But I think collectively, if the system drives it, those barriers can be overcome.
What are the things that are working best, you think, in tackling the problem of respiratory conditions having such a big demand on the NHS services? What are the things that really work?
One of the things I haven't mentioned today is a programme called the CURE programme, which is being led by one of my colleagues, Matt Everson, in Greater Manchester. It is a complete transformation of how we look at tobacco addiction. So we're moving away from this being a lifestyle choice to it being seen as a relapsing, remitting disease that will kill you eventually. And it's got very, very good treatments that are available but are underutilised. So every patient who comes into our hospital now who smokes will get targeted interventions around smoking cessation, and the results from that have been absolutely fantastic, with something like a 60% quit rate at 6 weeks. I think these sorts of large programmes, clinically led, are going to be key to turning around some of our outcomes. I mean, treating tobacco addiction is probably the most cost-effective thing that we can do as a respiratory group.
It's clear that we need to increase the uptake of the flu vaccination. It's a perennial challenge for the NHS. In Manchester, clinicians have been working on this across primary and secondary care with some surprising results. To address the winter increase in admissions for respiratory conditions, largely flu and pneumonia, the Strategic Clinical Network for Greater Manchester took a close look at who was getting the flu jab and who wasn't. Respiratory lead for the SCN, Jennifer Hoyle, describes what they found.
What I expected personally was to find that it might have been people that found it very difficult to get to the pharmacy in the community or the GP practice. So I was expecting perhaps those who had mobility problems or access to transport. But actually that wasn't the case at all. We did have one or two that found it more convenient from the mobility point of view. But the vast majority were actually quite mobile and young, and they'd had several letters and contacts via texts and phones to get the flu vaccination, and they hadn't attended. And the reason for that was they are busy, they are young, they have young families, and they don't necessarily see the importance of looking after themselves.
So what were the things you did which increased the uptake of the vaccination?
Well, the first thing we had to do is to ensure that we had people in our clinic who were trained to give the vaccination, and also we had the vaccine present, which means you need access to a fridge, and also that we had consent forms that we could share between ourselves and primary care. And then it was just a matter of identifying those who hadn't had the vaccination by asking them and offering it with an explanation as to why it was important.
It all sounds very simple, but I believe it wasn't. So why isn't it easy to do this?
It isn't as simple as it might seem. The systems are quite complex. For example, you have to order the vaccination in quite early on in the year. So the pharmacies, when they've ordered vaccinations in the hospital, have often ordered those for a pre-existing population, such as the staff. So you've got to order for the clinics quite early. There's also some concern that we might jeopardise GPs who need to provide vaccination with regards to their income and pharmacy. But actually, what we found is that number was actually very small, and we were definitely targeting people that were just not turning up rather than those that would, you know, traditionally go to their GP practice anyway.
So is the secret really collaboration and early planning?
It is. The secret is breaking down barriers and letting everybody to, you know, believe that they can do, rather than see the barriers, take them away and show that we can actually all work together.
Getting the flu vaccination is one way that people can help themselves. They can also use technology in their homes to monitor their conditions and provide information which helps health professionals to help them. Technology-enabled care lead for Lancashire and South Cumbria, Janet Davis, who led the region's testbed programme, describes the sort of devices being used and what patients think of them.
There's a whole host of technology, starting with the very simple, which could be something as easy as just using a thermometer and an SpO2 meter, or it could be right up to the gold standard where you're on a full telehealth monitoring, where a health professional is monitoring your daily readings, you're taking your blood pressure, you're taking your temperature, you're getting weighed, and those readings are going through and being monitored every day. But what the really important thing is about you being involved in your self-care. So the technology has to help you to look after yourself and self-care, and it's what's best for you and for your condition.
In Lancashire and South Cumbria, how much technology is being used and what difference is it making?
People are using lots of different technologies at the moment on a sort of trial and error thing too. There's so much out there on the market as well. So in the test bed, we use things such as Simple, which was a text messaging service. We've also used things for telehealth, like we've used Docabo for our telehealth there and their Doc at Home system. In Greater Preston, they've been trialling a different approach with a different telehealth company, so it's going to be great because we're going to be able to look at all the evidence together to see how we can match the perfect technology to the right patient.
What have you found so far with your experience in Lancashire and South Cumbria?
Patients love it. They love being involved. They love learning. They love watching little videos about their conditions and learning how to manage. They love learning to understand what their readings mean and when they can go out. It's around 80% of patients have said that they feel much better able to manage their condition through the use of technology. And that can only be for the good.
Are you seeing any impact on unplanned admissions or people turning up at emergency departments? Is it having any impact yet, or is that something that will come in the future?
It will come in the future when we run it at scale. However, we've through the test bed and our wave 1.5, we have managed to get the evidence to show that we're reducing hospital admissions by about 27%, which actually matches the longitudinal study that was done in Liverpool as well, which is really good to know.
There was a mother and daughter duo at the Ecosystem event who described their own antidote to breathing problems, one that also delivers a boost to mental well-being. Carol and Natasha Liddell run the Wigan Warblers, which started after Carol realised that singing helped her to manage her COPD. They are both fantastically positive and our delegates loved hearing from them and joining in a bit of singing.
I was very lucky. When I was first diagnosed, I was sent on a pulmonary rehabilitation course. So that gave me certain tools in my toolbox to start looking after myself and showed me it was okay to be breathless. Don't be scared of it. Don't stop doing things. And all along, I'd always enjoyed singing. And the only time I can completely forget about my COPD is when I'm singing. I don't notice it. If I'm walking and struggling, I'll just start singing. So that I'd seen that there were people with singing groups for breathing and that work was being done down south. But there was nothing in my area, and the nearest Breathe Easy group was in Lee, the next village. So together with my daughter and a few other people, we thought, right, well, we'll give this a go. So we started off, we were just singing along to tracks, a bit like carpool karaoke almost. And as we were doing it, and we were building up a following on Twitter, getting to know people, we got approached by the lady that runs the Singing for Breathing for the British Lung Foundation accreditation. And so she said, well, get Natasha on this course. So we applied, we got Natasha on the course, my daughter. We went down to London, she did the course, and the rest is history, really.
Yep.
Natasha, pick up the story about the Warblers and how you got to where you are now and what you do.
How I got to where I am and what I do really is firstly Carol's passion for it to begin with. I was nervous, apprehensive. I wouldn't even sing, would I? Or stand in front of what, 3 or 4 people, never mind, now in a room, what, 150 people, if not more, get everybody warbling, singing, interacting. But what I get most enjoy out of it is seeing people like my mum and the enjoyment I get from myself when I stand in front of a group of people or at conferences or talking about it is it makes people smile and happy. And with the way the world is today, you know, for us poorly people, smile, laugh, sing, exercise, well-being, it's all in one, really. And I think, you know, yeah, if you've got respiratory condition, you know, mental health side, you might have other long-term conditions as well. But for once, it makes us feel good, doesn't it?
You leave the illness at the door. Just leave the illness at the door. Yes, we've all got some sort of health issue, but we leave it at the door. We have fun. We support each other. Patients listen to patients. Peer support is invaluable. And it's just fun. Let's face it, it's exercise, it's fun, and it's good for us.
And ultimately, I think our dream would be, my mum's now going out speaking, giving out her experience and speaking your story and getting involved in other projects. And my goal at the end of it is to you know, get Singing for Breathing everywhere and work with, you know, like people like Feeney Cave and all the others who have got us where we are today, to give something back to them, but to give something back to everybody and make others feel the same as we do.
Yes, raise awareness. Show that you don't have to stay at home, sit on the couch. Stuff my sofa if you have a lung condition, if you don't get out and do something. So many people are isolated. They don't feel one group suitable for them. But there's always something to do at something like the Warblers. It's for the people, by the people.
I have to ask you now to give us a very quick demo. Show us something that you do when you're together.
Should we do where we get ourselves nice and relaxed and we take a nice deep breath in and a nice deep breath out, blow out, and one more nice breath in and breath out, and then a bit of a vocal, should we show them a ha 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 to get them laughing and a bit of feel good factor? What do you reckon?
Go on then.
So nice breath in. And as we breathe out, we go, ha, 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 ha. And there you go. Nothing better, more fun than that, really.
Carol and Natasha Liddell. Huge thanks to them and to everyone for being interviewed and for speaking at our ecosystem event in December 2019. You can listen to the full presentations on this podcast channel and go to the Innovation Agency website to download a summary of the innovations shared at the event. Thank you for listening. Thank you.